Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday. It is Tuesday, the 22nd of July. Very nice to have you aboard, and we are anxious to talk about a lot of issues. Let me introduce our panel to you. A little bit short staffed this morning, but we'll get along just fine. I said we are short staffed. But you will make up for it all.
In stature.
WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Political consultant Libby Post joins us. Ray is off today. Mike Spain, unfortunately, had a death in his family and was unable to join us today. So we send our best wishes and condolences to him and to his family.
We do.
And
we love him.
And he'll be with us later in the week. But we wanted to check in. So we can hold down the fort for the day, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm not really used to too much talking.
Yeah, I know. You know what? This is what I know about you. After 20 years, you'll rise to the occasion.
Okay, I'm going to try, but as you know, I'm not really.
And then, Joe, you're going to have to fill in a little.
Yeah, all right. You're going to have to talk more. Well, that's all right.
Maybe I should do what the guy does on television. Maybe I should today, just for today, play a conservative.
Oh, do like Colbert?
Colbert.
Yeah,
okay.
Do that.
I could do that role. Colbert, and I could be the play the conservative.
Oh, that would be fun.
There you go. Okay. Well, let's see how that works out this morning.
Okay.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Microphone's open, Libby.
I know. I just said or not.
Okay. So let's talk. First of all, we'll go to Russia to talk about the crash investigation. And the president spoke on this issue yesterday. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But Russia presented a combination of conciliation and bluster on Monday over its handling of the downed Malaysia Airlines jet, with President Putin seemingly probing for a way out of the crisis without appearing to compromise with the West. On one hand, he offered conciliatory words in a video statement oddly released in the middle of the night, while the separatist ally with Moscow in southeastern Ukraine released the bodies of the victims and turned over the black box flight recorders from the doomed aircraft to Malaysian officials. However, two senior military officers forcefully demanded that the United States show publicly any proof that rebels fired the fatal missile, and again suggested that the Ukrainian military shot down the Malaysia Airlines jet, despite the fact that Ukraine has not used any aircraft weapons in the fight along its eastern border. Mr. Putin seemed to respond to the outraged international demands growing daily that he intervene personally to rein in the rebels, particularly to halt the degrading chaos surrounding the recovery of the remains. That is one issue. There also, of course, the president spoke on this issue yesterday. President Obama delivered yet another personal rebuke to Mr. Putin from the White House lawn over the rebels toward the international investigation hours before they agreed to more cooperation.
We played it yesterday.
And let's start there. I mean, I think Alan said this to me just as we were right after it aired, that it seemed like there wasn't a lot there. He had to say something. Mm-hmm. So he said it.
No, I think I was pleased that he said what he said, because you know, it takes a certain amount of gumption to get up there and basically say, listen, this is Putin and this is Putin's guys. And that's what he should do. We're going to do a special Vox Pop this afternoon. And I hope that everybody will call in and say what it is that they would do right now if they were the president of the United States. What would you do? Putin, of course, can't be trusted. He's just who he is. He says one thing, it's the exact opposite. I think internationally he's really hurt himself. There's the same deal that he has with the European Union. They need his oil, he needs their money, and they are loath to get involved in this thing, but they have to. So the sanctions are there, and now you see the Dutch who had so many people on the plane.
The Netherlands,
who, you know, just say, okay, there's a limit to mm-hmm. what we can do and take, even though there are economic benefits from doing this. So I think Putin is really getting it in the neck. The press is terrible. You know, you get You get the Daily
Let's
News.
Start there.
The Daily News has I think it's the Daily News today, a cartoon which shows Obama playing with his dog and saying, no, don't do that, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, that kind of stuff. So not that one, you know, I feel that Zuckerman, who runs the Daily News, is getting closer and closer to the Murdochian way of doing things. But that's what I think.
Yeah, well, we can get into that issue at some point.
Right.
What the sales.
I'm always willing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting what you said about the president. What would you do? You know, I think there's a part of our American psyche who wants a president to get up there and pound his chest and eye for an eye and come out, you know, swinging. And that's just not Obama's way of doing things. And he's been effective in getting things done. And it wouldn't do any good except for those who want to see that kind of behavior.
It would ever be enough.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
the guys
right.
who criticize Obama.
Yeah, there's
the
never enough.
Would
there's
it ever
never,
be enough?
Right. There's yeah. never enough.
I was impressed.
I thought he was gutsy. And
yeah.
and he said what he needed to say, that Putin, you know, is responsible for this. And that's what needs to be said over and over and over again. And, you know, now Ukraine is a CNN story. Ukraine is saying that a Russian officer pushed the button, you know, and that it's Ukrainian intelligence. Now, who knows what to believe?
What are they going to say?
Considering, you know, it's Ukrainian intelligence and they hate Putin and all this stuff is going on. And, you know, and what tends to get lost here.
So I think a good excuse is we don't know how to work that.
Yeah, probably.
Well, except that the real problem is, I think we all have to remember, because we always do this, if we have an enemy, then we say the other guy on the other side is good.
Right. Our enemies.
I don't think the Ukrainians are necessarily good. So I think we have to remember that.
Not a white hat exactly.
Right. Yeah. But we have to remember we have to remember the families here, and at least the bodies and the black box has been turned over as of late last night to the Malaysian government.
Yeah. And, or at least most.
At least, you know, they're making those efforts to at least look humanitarian.
But they have videos, Libby,
of people looting.
Of these guys looting their bodies, bodies.
And
credit cards, jewelry. It's just disgusting. Yeah. It really is disgusting. And I do think Putin is very damaged by this. And I don't know if he'll be able to come back.
Did you see the video? I mean,
I know,
he looked
shaken,
damaged.
Pasty.
I mean, I know. Pasty, very, he didn't look into the camera directly.
Right.
He seemed to stammer. He was leaning on a desk.
He didn't take his shirt off. I mean, no. He wasn't on a horse. I mean,
and he wasn't saying anything different, but it was certainly,
well put.
It was not the confident guy that you usually see banging on the desk.
No, I think he knows that there's no backing away from this, and that all of Europe is going to get involved now in some way.
In which case, he backs away. So in other words, in which case, he eats a little crow, and then he continues
business as usual.
Yeah, and then looks for the next way to do things.
Right. Right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some other ramifications to this story, as well as other stories. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be right back after the story.
Support for WAMC goes on Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts, designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions. PioneerPostandBeam.com. Carey Institute for Global Good, presenting Pleasures of the Palate, Wild Mushroom Crafting with Nova Kim and Les Hook, August 17th, 10:30 a.m. to 3 p.m., reservations required, 518-797-5100. Capital Counseling, mental health therapy for adults, teens, children, and couples in both private and group settings. Your lifeline to better mental health, capitalcounseling.org. And the Sembrick, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting an afternoon of jazz with pianist Jamie Reynolds and vocalist Melissa Stigliano, July 27th at 4 p.m., sembrick.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning, and we are talking about Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 and the downing of that aircraft last week. All 298 people aboard were killed. So CNN has put together some of the outstanding questions here. Obviously, the first and foremost, who shot down the plane? Then why would anyone target a passenger plane? Why was the plane flying over a war zone?
What was the answer to number two, Joe, that they came up with?
Well, if indeed the rebels are behind the attack, they may have mistaken Flight 17 for a Ukrainian military aircraft. In the past few months, the rebels have used surface-to-air missiles to bring down more than a dozen planes, including two transport aircraft. According to the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. Shortly after the crash, the self-proclaimed defense minister of the People's Republic claimed on social media that the rebels had shot down a military transport plane. So it does. John McCain has said that it has the earmarks of a mistaken identification of an aircraft. Now, whether that is so, but it is a question as to why anyone would target a passenger plane. Also, when will international investigators get access to the crash site? UN Security Council meeting ended early Monday with Australia introducing a resolution that called for a swift international investigation. And then the ultimate, how will Russia respond?
And Russia is playing the victim here. You know, when you read the article in the Times, they actually did some interviewing with people on the streets. And this one person said, we all know what the conclusion to that investigation will be. So why even bother pretending? Russia is the world's scapegoat. And so it doesn't, you know, they think that they're innocent and it doesn't matter
this goes directly to Putin's motivation for doing all of this. It builds him up. And he has, I truly believe that his ultimate goal is to restore the prestige of the old Russia
Imperial.
And the old Soviet.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's who he is.
You know, what they're saying on state-run TV in Russia, you know, they're finding stuff, conspiracy theories from what they call the dark corners of the web. One such theory holds that whoever shot down the plane was actually gunning for Putin, whose plane was over Eastern Europe at the time, returning for Latin America. Oops, we missed. And another argues that the bodies were actually from the Malaysia jet that disappeared 4 months ago, dumped only now to make the separatists look bad. You know, no one in Russia thinks that anybody in Russia is ever guilty of anything. So there you go.
There is that.
Yes.
We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Anything more on that?
I'm always fascinated by what the role of public opinion in these crises are or is. I had somebody very angry at me the other day because you may remember we had a little discussion on Germany. And a woman called me up and she said, let's just remember that most of the people in Nazi Germany were not for Hitler. Only 20%, she said. And I said, How do you know that? I said, all I know is I saw some pictures of Nuremberg, if you may remember. I don't think these people literally can proceed without public opinion being on their side. And I'm quite sure that that's what this whole thing with Putin is all about, which is to solidify himself, you know, with the Russian people.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome your thoughts on this. Roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. A lot of other stories to talk about. I want to quick hit on one thing just because we only have a minute or two. And I don't know, maybe we need longer for this. But Charles Schumer has written an op-ed piece in the New York Times and saying polarization and partisanship are a plague in American politics and is looking to end partisan primaries to save America.
Wow.
And to adopt the open primary. In our 2 minutes left, thoughts on that statement?
Well, first of all, you have to remember where Schumer is a senator from, right?
Right.
He's a senator from New York. You can have all the open primaries you want because it's a Democratic state.
Right.
So that's got to be good you know, for the Democrats, right? We have open primaries, basically, in Massachusetts, good state where I live. As long as you're a quote, unregistered, meaning not that you're not registered, but that you don't have a party affiliation, you walk in and they say, what do you want, Democratic or Republican? And I'm all for it. I think it's great because in the end, in a lot of these states, it's the primary where the election is held, and you can't get around that. So I think it's a great idea. Of course, somebody could make trouble by voting against the best interest of the party that you're voting with.
Right.
So you might, for example, vote for a reactionary. If you're a Democrat, liberal Democrat, you might vote for a reactionary candidate, hoping that, you know, that would stop them because that would be an unacceptable non-middle-of-the-road candidate.
Well, I think the other alternative here, because I'm not so sure about agreeing with open primaries, to have Republicans determine who a Democratic candidate is going to be or vice versa, is that people can only run on one line.
Yeah, now that's the other that makes New York very different.
Right, that's the other thing.
So now you got Cuomo starting a women's line, and then he has he has the working families line and the other thing. Now, Libby, just for a second, why is it a bad idea to allow them to be on more than one line?
Well, it blurs the reality of the various parties, and it just politicizes even more. I mean, it is a political process, but it politicizes it even more. And what you have then happening is, the Conservative Party endorsing somebody who is diametrically opposed to their basic issues because it's political expedience for them, and it maintains their ballot position. That's really what it's all about. Yes, it's over. It maintains their ballot position because you need to get at least 50,000 votes in order to maintain your position
on
the ballot.
We only have 5 seconds, so I'm going to quickly
we'll
just pause and then we'll come back and talk about this because I also want to talk about California, who adopted this and how it's going there. We'll be back after this break on WAMC. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning and our nice little intimate group this morning, Alan Chartok, Libby Post, myself. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
That's all true, except the intimacy part.
Oh,
well, it's an intimate little group.
It's a nice little group.
Oh, no, that's right.
Yes.
I remember.
That's what it's
I think you're taking
his use of the word intimacy.
Intimacy.
Yes, I think I'm using perhaps the first or second.
Roselle gets nervous when we.
Well, tell Roselle between Joe and I, she has absolutely nothing to worry about. And we spent the weekend together, and come on.
Yeah, now that
nothing
we proved that.
Right.
All right. Okay, we have some letters, and then we'll go back to our discussion about open primaries and the op-ed piece that Senator Schumer put into the New York Times. He didn't put in. It was accepted, correct?
Yeah.
The way they would say that?
Yeah. Okay, so Tom, our regular correspondent, says, I don't care about polls, and I certainly don't support a politician who only does his job based on polls. I want someone smarter than me and smart at the business of government, said Tom. And then regular correspondent Medden says, for your information, Alan, I have heard you say unregistered several times. It's confusing, really. Massachusetts has, as perhaps in other states, the term is not unregistered. It's officially called unenrolled. Quite right.
Right.
He's quite right. Call me up short.
Right.
As in not enrolled in any party. Good point. And then I'm keeping looking. But do you see anything else there?
Although we knew what you meant.
Yeah, we did. But fair. Okay. Then
Michael
said that's incorrect. Hitler was legitimately elected as chancellor by a majority of the German people. What was incorrect? That somebody said to me
20%.
Somebody said to me only 20%. Well, yes, that's exactly right. Okay,
and then if you go to the top, you'll see one there from Kevin, I believe.
Oh, Kevin is here. And Kevin says, I believe we should eliminate party primaries altogether. Either one all-inclusive primary where the top two go on to the general election or to save money just at an instant runoff or the general election ballot. interstate like Massachusetts, this would give us more of a choice between a centrist Democrat and a liberal Democrat. And a liberal Democrat. Right now, your only choice is in the Democratic primary, and most people don't vote in that election, and it gives too much control to the party to decide who is going to be our representative. I believe this would give more control back to the voters, and while I don't like to comment on letters, I agree with him.
Well, but people can go out and vote.
We'll comment.
You know, the idea that it's the party's fault or it's the system's fault that people don't go out and vote in a primary.
Well, Libby, you couldn't be more right, always.
You know, you give up your franchise. That's your responsibility.
Well, that's a race sort of thing. People take personal responsibility.
Right, I agree with that one.
Yeah, and we know that in the primaries that the people who are most likely to be ideological go out and vote. And sometimes in a primary, a big primary, you get 15%. Making that decision, or 10% mm-hmm. making mm-hmm. that decision. That's why I like this other,
right? I get it.
This other way of doing things.
I do want to. I want to talk about two other issues here, and that is stories that are New York generated, but have been making headlines around the country. First of all, investigation and outrage. Follow police chokehold and Eric Garner's death. The prisoner, in case you missed the story over the weekend, Eric Garner, mm-hmm. a 43-year-old Staten Island man, was put in what looked like a chokehold on Thursday by a New York City police officer and died. The episode was recorded, and after the video was posted by the New York Daily News and viewed thousands of times, outrage and horror began to build. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio spoke on Friday about the, quote, terrible tragedy that had occurred, briefly delaying a family vacation to Italy due to the situation. He said, like so many New Yorkers, I have been troubled by the video I reviewed earlier today, speaking to reporters alongside William Bratton, the police commissioner. And he has ordered that Bratton make sure there is a full investigation. And
chokeholds, by the way, are forbidden in
prohibited by the New York City Police Department. Yeah. And
can I just tell you a little story? I probably shouldn't. But when I worked at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, I had a class, and in the class, and this was many, many years ago, I had in the class a prison guard. And the guy gave me a paper, and with it, he gave me a bottle of scotch. And I said, what's this?
So obviously he didn't know you very well.
Right. I said, I can't take this. I said, what's this? He says, this is to make my paper go down more easily. but then I said, where are you going? After I had said, no, I don't take these things. He said, well, I'm going back to the prison where we have a little enforcement gang to keep order in the place. So this has been going on.
Oh, forever.
And we are talking about, you know, I hate to say it, 45 years ago. So it really is something that's
well.
Been
you're
going
talking
well,
about the other story, you
yes,
know,
I am.
About
Rikers
what's going
Island.
On Rikers
Island, which is
horrible.
We'll talk about.
But if anybody watches the video,
well, that's what I was going to say.
The video. You know, you expect that the police in a city like New York are trained not to engage with somebody like, you know, he was argumentative, but that's not a reason to put a man in the chokehold, and then they all piled up on top of him, and that's the issue here. They all piled up on top of him. He kept screaming, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, and that's what killed him.
Now, obviously, the fatality, the death here is a rare occurrence. Now, whether the use of the chokehold is more common, but the fact that it was caught on video and that it is seen...
That's always Rodney King. I mean,
that's what happens.
And, I mean, to your point of
and they
you know,
knew.
How much of this is done that we don't know about. And, right.
And they knew that somebody was videoing because one of the cops turned around and said, get up on the stoop. And you hear the interchange between the cop and the guy who's
you'll get
doing
a better
the video.
View. Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, how stupid can you be? You
well,
know
you're,
that
well,
this
but
is going
the reason
on.
You're not stupid, in
it's
quotes,
power.
Is because you're saying we've never been caught before.
Right.
That's why when you see all these politicians grafting like they do, and you say, how can they do that? How can they be so stupid? Well, you have to imagine that this is not the first time.
Right. And what's going on at Rikers is, you know, it's just the other side of the coin.
So yeah, let's get to that story real quick. And I'll just give the setup here for the New York Times. New York City's Department of Investigations has begun a review of scores of cases involving inmates at Rikers Island who were assaulted by correction officers and suffered serious injuries. The department, which combats corruption in city agencies, is looking into the 129 cases from an 11-month period in 2013 that were detailed in an article in the New York Times last week. The injuries were the focus of a secret report completed this year by the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene and obtained by the Times, highlighting a culture of violence that in particular victimizes inmates with mental illnesses. So I'm reading this and the report last week and the report in the Times today. Man, 129 cases in a year seems...
It's a lot.
A lot. I mean, that's a culture, right?
First of all, we closed down a lot of our primary mental health facilities.
Right.
And so everybody goes into the jail.
Right, because there's not enough help.
So, and second of all, as we've said, this has been going on for a long time. Are we willing to put the money into this system? Hey, I'll be honest with you guys. I would not want to be a prison guard. This is not an easy job.
Not at all.
Very hard job. These are some of the most difficult people in the world who are here. And there are gangs that roam these institutions.
Yeah,
yeah. The prisoners are, yeah. And the gangs who roam these institutions and rule them, you know, the subculture, it's got to be a very difficult job. So you begin to believe your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You begin to believe, well, get up on the stool because we're on the side of God. And that's why it's okay.
Now, real quick, Mark Peters, the commissioner for the city's Department of Investigation, had an interview on this and said the case is troubling, quote, because there was a supervisor whose job it was to make sure that we follow the rules,
a woman
who manufactured evidence to help the people she supervises to break the rules.
She made a noose out of the guy's pants.
Man.
And then post hoc propter hoc tried to set it up so that it looked like it was a suicide.
Right.
It's as Alan said. I mean, it's very distressing, and these guys are under a lot of pressure. And I for one would never want to be on the other side of the gate.
No,
that's for sure, in any kind of capacity whatsoever.
Right.
And so I'm very thankful for those who do want to go, and I'm very thankful for the police as well. I just want to make that clear. I'm not, you know, against the police. You know, I want them to be there when we call and we need them. Just like
otherwise call a hippie.
Right, just like everybody else does. but it's the action and this happens all the time. It's the action of a few who tarnish the reputation of all.
I'm not so sure. In other words, I'm not so sure it's such a few. As I indicated before, that little story of mine from way back in the day.
Well, inside.
Yeah, I think on this the inside. I think there's such violence, and that this becomes the operational
the
methodology.
Right.
For the way
the operational methodology that is necessary.
I don't think it's necessary if you support the system with the money that it takes to support the system.
What needs to happen is more mental health money needs to be put into the system. So these folks who end up there who are mentally ill and are not criminals, they shouldn't be in jail. They should be in group homes. They should be being helped within the mental health system.
Well, no, I'm not so sure. Let's assume somebody's really nuts.
Well,
that's a word, by the way, I want to take back because every time I use it on the radio, somebody writes me a letter.
Right.
Mentally ill.
Right.
Every time.
Well,
okay,
if they're criminally mentally ill and they commit horrible crimes.
They murder somebody.
Thing. Yes, that's one thing. But there are so many people who are just mentally ill, homeless, end up in the system. And shouldn't be there.
Absolutely right.
And that's the folks that I'm talking
about.
So, always.
Playing devil's advocate, is it fair for the correction officers to have to deal with that situation? I mean, they're given this situation.
Well,
so
that's what organizing is all about. You turn around and you say, wait a second now. You're asking us to do the impossible. You have to give us the resources to do this. Otherwise, we can't do this job.
Right. I mean, the mentally ill issue, the lack of resources to care for the mentally ill in our country, you know, manifests its way itself
across
in many,
board,
many
criminal
ways.
Criminal or not.
Right. It manifests its way itself in many ways. One is here. Other is people can go buy guns.
Right.
right? And then they end up in the system, you know, maybe, if they,
well,
they're,
not,
they're
or,
caught.
Yeah. And not to mention the people who just take their own life because they can't deal
that's
with
right.
what.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we need to have a better way of dealing with the mentally ill and giving them the resources to get healthy. And being in jail isn't the place. And, you know, Alan, I have a feeling that if you talk to the folks who teach at John Jay, right, where a lot of these folks come through, they only teach the academic part. They only teach the theory. They only teach about what it's supposed to be.
Exactly right.
You know, and then, just like in politics, you get into it and it's totally different. And the
that's
younger
why you
ones,
took me for a lot of classes, right?
Yes, that's
well,
right.
I think I was on the other side of the page talking
well, you
about
were,
the way it really
because
worked.
Because you brought us people who talked about
the way
how
it, worked.
It really worked.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you get these young correctional officers who walk into a situation where their commanders are saying, well, this is the way we do things here.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But I don't know. I one of my great pet peeves is that term corrections. The Department of corrections, a correctional facility, corrections officers.
You're supposed to
correcting
somebody.
Anything.
Right.
I mean, the way the system is right now.
Right.
Yeah, but it's words mean things,
well,
and that doesn't mean what it is.
Well, they
the
just change the words.
Criminal justice
right.
They're just going to change the words.
It's
when
not
that word
jail.
Gets when that word gets overused, they'll find something else.
Right.
You know, Joe, I keep
thinking
about
I wish they were correction officers, and I wish they were given the power to do something, and I wish the facilities were given the power to do something to help
correct
the people
behavior.
Who are inside the
well, they do something.
The
they keep some of the worst people in the world away from the other general population,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah. But unfortunately, they also keep some people who have no business being in prison.
Right.
There, and that's it. That we're seeing more of. You know, I was thinking about Geraldo Rivera. Just the other day.
I'm
I love
sorry,
talking about
you were
him.
Thinking about him.
Yeah. And then he's not one of my favorites. Okay.
Nor mine.
And you know, he gets all of these awards for going into Creedmoor or whatever it was.
Back in the day.
Not to mention Capone's.
There isn't a reporter out there who can't go into a mental health facility now and find basically something to write about that would, if written in the right way, would get them a Pulitzer.
Right.
Because the condition, we don't put the money in, we don't have community mental health facilities
right.
that we promised under Kennedy's regime.
We keep cutting and cutting and cutting.
Right.
You know, about 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to spend several days in a prominent mental health facility.
Really?
And to me, it was, I don't know. Like what you do. You know, I don't know what you do. I think the looking at the situation and looking at what the about there it was for the criminally insane, and it's a place where the obviously security is foremost, but also working with the patients themselves and dealing with their medical issues, that seems like almost an impossible balance.
And not only that, I want to point something else out to you, Joe, and that real quickly, and that is that because we shut down so many of our state hospitals, something for very good reasons, it's almost impossible to get into one of these,
yes.
right.
one
well,
of these places. So you either have to,
in this case, you're sentenced there, but right.
Yeah, so you are talking about, you know, amongst the most difficult things to do. I get calls from families all the time who want to have somebody, an uncle or somebody who's really, you know, off the wall and say, well, is he in danger? Is he a danger to himself or is he a danger to anybody else? And if you can't prove it, they don't go.
And at what point is the person better? And are they able to go out into society? And have they, even if they've been there for 20 years, have they paid their time? And are they mentally better to go out and go into the system, or is it just going to?
Very difficult. We should have these facilities, and we keep talking about it. We keep talking about community mental health centers.
Mm-hmm.
We keep saying we're going to do it, and that's the way we can know whether somebody should be trusted with a gun and all the rest. And then turns out that we don't do it.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up our conversation and talk about other issues. We've got a lot of subjects today. We'll get to a few more when we come back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC gives them Capital Wine at State and Lark in the heart of Albany, offering local and international wines. Tastings Friday 6 to 9, CapitalWineStore.com. Catskill Hudson Bank, specializing in commercial loans for local businesses and organizations, 12 branches in the Hudson Valley, Catskills, and now Malta. Opening soon in Poughkeepsie, member FDIC, equal housing lender, CatskillHudsonBank.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. And Brattleboro Retreat, offering an LGBT inpatient program providing mental health and addiction services for the LGBT adults. BrattleboroRetreat.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable program. We have a few letters to get to, and then we'll take on our final topic for the day.
Okay, and Jeremy has this to say, as soon as I get to see it. Speaking of prison, some of your listeners might appreciate the recent John Oliver episode devoted to the prison system and the privatization of it. It's very eye-opening and very scary. Looking forward to alternative radio.
I don't know if any of you have seen Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO. Yeah. It's on Sunday night. John Oliver, currently or formerly of The Daily Show, but it is an excellent, very eye-opening program.
And IAI calls and says, writes and says, one, parenthesis, appeasement. In A.J.P. Taylor's book, The Origins of the Second World War, it is not until page 198, when public opinion in England turned sharply against the appeasers, that Chamberlain began to take a harder stand against Hitler. And then he goes on and on and on, and I wish I could read it, the whole letter, but I really can't. Okay, because, you know, you got to keep them short. Eisenhower said, if you can't do it in a paragraph, don't do it. And here is, I don't know, here is the Malaysian incident, and this is from Sean. If I were the president, I would let the Netherlands, China, and Germany run the investigation. I would completely remove the U.S. and Ukraine from this investigation so that the Russian people can see that there was no tampering with the evidence by their perceived enemy. Changing the opinion of the Russian people should be a priority to ensure Putin stops his support of the rebels. That's what he said. And then I think that you see something else, Joe?
No, I think you got them all. Excellent. We are out of time, but obviously we welcome you to, I know, we'll be here tomorrow. We'll get to much more stuff.
Okay.
We welcome your comments. In the meantime, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. The program will continue after this break.